We're here at Menards Bag Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint.
Batteries.
Tools.
Toilet paper.
Extension cords. Grocery items.
Hardware for my cabinets.
Snack items. Crackers and some canned good stuff.
Shop vac supplies.
Toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Your check, your cooperative. As a farmer-owned lender, Farm Credit Mid-America shares the success of the cooperative with our customers, which is why we've returned more than $1.25 billion back to our customer owners over the last 8 years. It's proof being a part of our cooperative pays. Patronage is an annual decision made by the board of directors to return earnings to eligible customers. To learn more about patronage and eligibility, visit fcma.com/patronage.
As I always say, we're live.
We're live. Episode 3.
Yes. Bookish Buzz podcast, episode 3. And sorry, it took a while to get back to you all. Life gets in the way. It was the holidays and it's really important. And we want to, you know, give that message to everyone. It's really important to spend that time kind of decompressing and spending time with family and celebrating holidays and reprioritizing your mental health, all the things that we need to do to get through the world and in life as it is. So that's what we did.
It was definitely a much needed break. I think I enjoyed it more than I probably should have, but it was needed.
I don't think there's a limit on how much you should enjoy it. We work entirely too hard. We have these passion projects and other things we want to focus our energy on, but we only have so much energy, guys. So we're recentered, we're refocused. We're going to recap 2024 and give a brief look at episode 4, which is going to be our 2025 episode, a look ahead and some exciting stuff.
I can't wait to dive in.
Fantastic. So we are going to get started with our reading goal wrap up. I think before I was setting, you know, I'm a math person, so I was setting goals like 52 books a year because there are 52 weeks in a year. Then I was like, maybe I should do 104. I know there's a lot of YouTubers and BookTubers and everybody else who sets their goal to like 1 or 12, and then they read 250 books a year. The goal doesn't matter. However, for me, it helps keep me focused on, yes, I would feel good if I achieve 100 books in a year. If I do 150, great. If I do 50, I mean, it's a little disappointing because I wanted to read more, but I know things got in the way. So for my goal last year, it was 100, and I did achieve it with 107. Granted, I did do some audio exclusives in there. Impact Winner comes to mind from Audible, and some graphic novels. It's reading to me. It's got pictures and it's got words. I'm going to call it. So some of that 107 are those categories, but I'm really happy with my reading year. I mean, I definitely had majority of my books above a 3-star. The majority of the poor books are poor for a reason, and I could go on and on about them, my 1-star ratings. I also have a no rating because it's a children's book that I will talk about here in a little bit. So of that 107, 25-star, and then between 4 and 3 stars, which to me is that category in which I feel like those are good books, there's another 68. So yeah, I'm really happy with my reading year last year. How did you do?
Well, I don't have all the statty stats like you, but I did hit my goal of 50. For me last year, I think I set it last year for like 40 and I didn't make it, but I know work stuff and I had some certifications and stuff that I had to do. So I couldn't really get in the books like I wanted. But 2024, I said, I'm going to set a goal of 50 and I actually did it. Like literally, I closed the last book right at midnight. I'm like, yes, finally, I made it.
I know you were texting me and I was like, oh, is she going to get it? Is she going to get it? I mean, if it was 2 o'clock in the morning, we would have counted it.
I totally would have counted it. But the fact that I was literally looking for a book that I could finish within like 6 hours, I was like, okay, we're going to do this. I'm going to find a book. And it ended up being perfect. So I was very happy to hit that goal of 50. I did have mostly 4s and 5s. I just skimmed over, you know, what was on Fable because Goodreads does not like me right now. But I had a nice little mix of 4s and 5s. I did have my first 1-star, which was very surprising. I had a 2 and I had a couple 3s.
Now, was that 1-star because do you normally DNF 1-stars?
No, this one was just terrible. I tried. I did finish it just because I needed to know what happened. But I'm like, this book is bad.
Is that going to be featured on one of our lists coming up here soon?
Yeah, okay, definitely.
Because I want to know what book it is. I think I have a hunch, though. All right. So reading goals are a vital part of being a reader. It doesn't mean we're just out here trying to get numbers. I could read 1,000 children's novels and be just as pleased as if I read 10 adult novel fantasy novels that are 700, 800, 900 pages. It doesn't matter as long as I'm spending my time doing the hobby that I love and enjoying what I'm reading. If I'm just trying to hit numbers and I'm finishing books because, well, I started it and now it's a 1-star and I know it's going to be 1-star because it's garbage, but I got to push through. I don't want to do that. So this is going to be the year of DNFs. I only had 2 last year. And I mean, I don't want 100 of them, but like if I'm really not enjoying a book and I have my first DNF of the year already and we're 2 weeks in, if I'm not enjoying it, I shouldn't have to push through it. It just doesn't make any sense.
Just set it down.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. So let's get into the good stuff. I did take some of these prompts from BookTube and from articles on the internet because, you know, trying to get a good idea of like, what do we want to talk about in terms of what makes our year successful? As we're learning about our reading tastes, that also requires us to also have some disappointments and some other negatives on there. But I think that's all part of the journey. So let's get into the prompts and we're going to talk about the top books of the year. We could not narrow it down to one. It just isn't the case. We had a great reading year, at least I did. And so I've got some to talk about. You go ahead first.
All right. So my top books of the year, I feel like I talk about them every episode so far.
Let me see if I can guess. The Women.
Yep. You got it. The Women. That had to be my number one read last year. Just the story of it. I can still sit and reflect on it. And it was just a good read. I also have The American Queen. I have The Reformatory. And we'll just list them all in the description with authors and everything. And then I had to add in some Kennedy Ryan. This Could Be Us and Before I Let Go. I can't wait for the third book to come out this year. And Loved by You, which was actually by an independent author.
Oh, that's really cool. I know I'm going to get to The Women at some point. I think when we're going to tackle Nightingale first, because we keep hinting at it and then I keep backing it. But I definitely want to get it. I thought Kristen Hannah was kind of the person who puts out like a book every once in a while, every couple of years. And then I started seeing just how many books she has out there and how beloved they are. And I'm like, okay, I can't, as a literary person, I can't overlook the fact that she's won countless awards and she's in your top list. I know a friend of mine, actually a former boss from my new company, she was struggling with The Nightingale. And then when she finished it, she absolutely loved it. So I'm like, I think that's where I'm going to start. I think it's more in line with my taste so that it's not too far out of my comfort zone. And then if I'm just enraptured by it, we'll move on to The Women. Because I trust you, and I know you loved it, so I got to check.
So we're going to read The Nightingale this week, right?
This week? You're out of your mind. I just finished Stormlight Archives. That took me 45 hours. It's going to be a minute. All right, so on to my top books of the year. The first two I'm going to put is like number one and number two. Really, it's a toss-up, but I'd say that if I thought about a book that needs all of the hype, it's going to be my number one, because if I think like, hey, what was the one book I read last year that I want to tell everybody about? I don't care if it's not your taste and the name's going to give it away, but maybe it's not your taste, but it is so satirical and funny and horrific and just all around incredible. And that's Bury Your Gaze. I've talked about it 1,000 times, and that's gaze as in G-A-Y-S, not gaze as in I gazed into your eye by Chuck Tingle. It's just too good to put into words. The message that is behind this over-the-top horror genre blend got some sci-fi in it. It's just written so well. The characters are great. It's meant to be over-the-top, and he knocks it out of the park. So that's my number one. I have to, you know, shout that at the rooftops, because like 2023, I had a book that I recommend to everybody, which is Bloom. Just going to sneak that in there by Delilah S. Dawson. And that's going to be the same way with this one. My number two book, and I'm sure I'll get a chuckle out of you, is Mistborn, because it doesn't need the hype. It has all the hype. It is an incredible book. It is a solid 5-star. No, solid isn't the right word. It is a near perfect book in that the characters are well written. The writing is unbelievably easy to digest. The story is grand. The world building is like no other. The magic system. Name something that you enjoy in books. It's in there. So Mistborn, the first book, the first trilogy, is definitely going to be in my top list for a long, long time to come. And the next three were actually, it was a little difficult to narrow down what I wanted to put down here, but A Dowry of Blood, I finally read that this year, and I was so hype about this book, and I knew there was a sequel coming out, and I've heard it in everybody's top lists for so long. I was like, I have to read it, and I fell in love with it. It would have been my number one book if I hadn't had Sanderson come in and just wreck everything, and if I hadn't found Barrier Gaze. It's so beautifully written with such a poetic prose. It is hands down, it's a horror story, but it's more than that. So A Dowry of Blood. And then I have two kind of unique ones. Icarus by Kay Ingram. She put together a Icarus retelling that's YA and is all about queer love and art and passion. And it doesn't read like a YA book. There are definitely some relationship dynamics to it that read YA, but overall, that's going to be an instant classic for me. And then lastly, everybody is putting this in their children's top books. It is the new Harry Potter. It is the new Percy Jackson. It's called Impossible Creatures. It's opened up a door. I can't wait for my kids to read these books. We're going to read them together as they come out. I think we've got a new series on our hands here. So Impossible Creatures rounds out my top five.
So that was a pretty awesome list that you have. Now let's go into our biggest surprise and our biggest disappointment. I mean, you can't have a surprise without a disappointment. I will start with my biggest surprise. I had a tie between Fourth Wing and Legendborn. Both of those were completely different worlds and everything. I just did not think that I was going to like them at all. And the fact that Fourth Wing dealing with the dragons and Legendborn with the secret society and magic, just all of that, I really enjoyed those. My biggest disappointment, The Night We Lost. That was a book that was available on Libby. And I was like, okay, it finally came up. I've been wanting to read it ever since it came out. And I was reading and, well, more so listening, and it just was flat. It just did not have the excitement in it. I did want to know who did it, I guess to say, or what happened at the end. That was the only reason why I was invested, because I was like, okay, this is going to hit my goal, but it was not it.
What's that star rating?
I think that was my one. Yeah, that was my one. I tried, but I mean, the cover was nice.
That doesn't mean anything anymore. They make these covers so good.
Well, at least I didn't buy it.
Yeah, that's where some of my biggest disappointments are going to come into. A lot of times, not with this one, but if I bought that book, or if I was waiting for it, I pre-ordered it, and then I get it, and I'm just like, that's what you gave me. This is how you reward me. That's usually when my disappointment comes in. But my biggest surprise is thanks to you and our wonderful book club on Who Needs Reads, because One Dark Window was not what I expected it to be. I thought it was just going to be like romantic-y. I don't want to say smutty, but I don't know, just not for me, not what I normally would read. Instead, I got a really decently complex magic system, wonderful world, decent characters, not a lot of spice, just like everything that's perfect for me in a fantasy read, a dark fantasy read. And I absolutely ate it up. Read both books, and it's going to get featured here in a little bit because it ended up being not only a biggest surprise, but I think one of my favorite series of the year. So.
Nice.
Yeah, that was a good one.
You know, surprisingly, One Dark Window didn't make any of my prompts. I didn't put in there for any of my prompts, but I love the book, but it just didn't hit any of my prompts.
That's because you didn't finish that second book.
I got to finish the second book. It's this year. It's on there.
It's so good.
Mood Readers Unite.
I'm with you. We got to get shirts. My biggest disappointment is actually one because people love it so much. Mira Grant is an author who goes by two names, Shauna McGuire, who everything she writes, I love. And then Mira Grant, which is her pen name for her adult novels. And I've enjoyed some other series by her that were definitely more in the horror sci-fi realm with the Feed series, which is all about zombies and stuff. And I thought, oh, I'm going to get just such a interesting story here. We're on the ocean. We've got like mermaid-like creatures. It's going to be a bloody mess. But I did not get that. So I got a very gross, bloody, flat story that I was not interested in, had too many characters. And I'm like, how are people giving these five stars and putting it in their top list? Come on. How? Well, thanks, guys. You steered me wrong. I love you all, but it is not a 5-star read. Not for me, and I don't know how it could be for you, but I respect you. Gosh, it was just so disappointing to read because the writing is exactly what I expected, but where she shines is character work, and it fell apart. Too many characters, none of them interesting. Actually, most of them, I feel I got confused because they were kind of the same character, and so I just didn't love it. Pretty big disappointment there, which is going to lead me into our next segment, which is our biggest or most overhyped book, which is Into the Drowning Deep. I don't know where you guys are getting this. It's not a 5-star read. Coming off of some of the other stories that she was able to write, I'm just not seeing it. I've read so many other stories about the ocean and like monsters in the deep, and there was some interesting dynamics to it, but just overall wasn't for me.
What was your rating for that one?
Gave it a 2, and I think I might have even said 1.5 rounded up. I was kind of brutal, but I give almost all of her books 4s and 5s, and they're some of my favorite series. I just finished book 10 in another one of her series. Like, I'm hooked. She's not going to get any lost love from me, but I won't be picking up any sequels she puts out in that world.
All right. Awesome. So Into the Drowning Deep, a book for me not to pick up.
Correct.
Thank you. All right. So now we're going to go into my biggest overhyped book. The first one, Pumpkin Spice Cafe. I just had to put it on there. It just was not for me. Everyone was so excited about this Pumpkin Spice Cafe and the series and all the books that are coming out, but that one just was not a good one for me. I think I actually put in my review that it was a palate cleanser because it was just something to listen to. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it, but it was just not for me.
I get this confused with Spell Shop, which I think you also read. Which one's better than the other? Because Spell Shop has a sequel coming out this year. And I was like, is that something that you'll continue in? Maybe something I should at least give a try? Or was Spell Shop the one where you were like, absolutely for me?
You know, I would say that Pumpkin Spice Cafe was just not for me. It was the true, just cozy, but it was also spice. And it had a story, but I feel like it was more spice than story. Now, the Cinnamon Bun Bookstore, I definitely enjoyed that one. First one was a miss for me.
All these books sound the same.
They do. And they look almost the same too. Spell Shop, however, I would actually read more of Spell Shop. I did enjoy the plot in it, relocating to this island and the plant that speaks and all of the things. Like I really enjoyed the magical element that was in there, but Pumpkin Spice. Nope. All right. So enough about that stuff. The other one that was overhyped, I would say that it was probably appropriately hyped, but I had to put it in there. The Housemaid, Freda McFadden. Everyone has their take on Miss Freda, but I will say the twist and the turns, I did not expect it at all. Have you ever read The Housemaid?
No, I've not read a Freda McFadden, and I absolutely crap all over her because I don't feel like any of her books could ever not guard. I think they're pretty predictable, and she's putting one-word book out every year, or maybe multiple in a year. So maybe I'm just like one of those haters who's like, it's TikTok hyped, so I don't want to read it. But it's TikTok hyped. I don't want to read it. But I probably need to at least experience it. And if I'm going to experience it, I think it's going to be The Housemaid, because I think that's going to be the best of her books out there.
I think that probably is one of the best, honestly. The other ones, like, I know it's the coworker and the inmate, yeah, or the teacher or something. Like, they
those, by the way. You literally picked, you can just throw words out and it's a Freda McFadden book. You can be like The Librarian. I bet you it's a book. It's
probably going to be another one coming out, The Librarian. But no, Housemaid, I think that might be your first challenge, because I'm telling you, I didn't expect it at all. I did not expect the twist. When I thought I had the twist, she just turned me completely another way. It had like a good 3 or 4 twists in it.
I'm humble enough to admit if I'm wrong. If I have been being mean for no reason and I read the book and I'm just like, yeah, I get it, I will concede. But I'm not going to hold true to it just to be like, no, I said I didn't like it. And then if she turns me on my head, I will admit it. Good luck.
You're going to read it.
I will read it because you're going to make me read it, probably.
Yep, sure am.
I know how you work.
All right. New favorite author or series. Another new one for me. This one is not really a hype, but yet it is still a hype. I'm trying to get my books in other places that I wouldn't normally get them. So not just so much Book Talk, but Bookstagram. I have a couple of people that I like to follow necessarily, but my favorite author, or I guess you can just say series, I don't know, but both of them. Kennedy Ryan with the Skyland series, Before I Let Go and This Could Be Us. Both of those for me were the ultimate love story. I found that I really do love reading love stories. I just love love. It's just something about it. I just love love. I would recommend for everyone to read both of those. Before I Let Go is the second chance romance. Do they go through with the divorce or do they try and make it work? And This Could Be Us is when she actually does get a divorce and she's trying to return back to who she is and find a new life without her ex.
What I've seen a lot in hearing about Kennedy Ryan is you have like Hildebrand. I can't remember her first name. It starts with an E. She writes these romances that, well, you know, I'm not going to call them romance. She writes these stories that are maybe a little bit out of most people's like reality zone. They're in like Cape Cod and Nantucket and like, that's not we. I know where we grew up. I know who we are. That doesn't fit us. And I feel like Kennedy Ryan fits more the average person. And I think that the core of like finding yourself again, they exist in both those books, but the person you're finding is very different. And I think I would relate more to the Kennedy Ryan side of things. I think there are some other people that maybe would fit better for me as a person, but I've heard good things about those books, and I think Emily's going to pick some of those up. So I'm excited to see if she likes those as well.
I put actually another book of hers on my list for this quarter of the year. It's Real, R-E-E-L. I've heard a lot of good things, and I think I'm actually going to read it next month just because of Valentine's Day. And I heard it's a pretty good story, so I think that's going to be one of my books for next month.
Fantastic. So, no surprise, my new favorite author, or series, and both, is Brandon Sanderson. I was a fan before because I picked up a Special Projects. That's where I started. And I'm like, is this guy really that good? There's so many funny TikToks, which today's the 19th, RIP, but also it's back up and running, so TikTok ain't going nowhere. But there's so many funny TikToks that are like, oh, you like my books? And then before they can even get done, he's throwing more books at them. And that's what it feels like, because there's just such a backlist of great books to read. But then I experienced Mist, and it changed the way that I even viewed Sanderson as a writer and the content and the ability of a fantasy story to not be traditional high fantasy. That's just going to like kill me with all of these politics of, oh, the high elves are up in the mountain. I don't want all that. I want unique worlds, unique races, unique magic, and every bit of Sanderson is that. And then I read Elantris, which is really very similar to a traditional fantasy where they are high elves, there are gods and goddesses. But the way that it's put is so different. There's a class system that is abused and, you know, power is a pretty common theme in most fantasy and the abuse of power, but he just does it so well. It's not boring. It's sci-fi, it's fantasy, it's incredible world building and magic like you've never read. So I can't see myself ever picking another author over him because he's that good. Now, I've only read a few books, 4 or 5, and there are a lot more to go. But this is, I've already said it in my other posts, this is the year of Sanderson for me. I will finish all of Mistborn and all of Stormlight Archives, including Wind and Truth, that just came out this year, which is a hefty goal. But yeah, definitely new favorite author, new favorite series. Stormlight hasn't taken over for favorite series. I like Mistborn a little bit more right now. But I'm only one book in on each, so maybe you'll get an update at the end of 2025.
So that's actually kind of funny because your new favorite author is my most challenging read for the year.
Yeah, I figured that was going to happen. We talk about it too much.
I think it's just the, well, that's the next prompt anyway, so we'll go right into it. My most challenging read of the year, I did put 2, but Mistborn. Mistborn for me was definitely challenging. I don't know if it just didn't fit the mood. Or I just was not, I don't know, maybe it's the world building because I didn't even get that far. I looked to see like how far I actually got on my Kindle while you were speaking about it. And I only got to, it says 2%.
Now, listen, I might not have read any of Freedom McFadden's, but I feel like I can at least say something there. I am hyping this book up too much for you to be 2% in and not liking it.
It literally says page 9 on my Kindle.
You're going to start over at page 1 because you were doing print, not audio.
I tried the audio. I think I probably got further in the audio. I feel like I got to like maybe chapter 2 or 3 audio. But when you try to work and you're trying to listen at the same time, especially for me when it's more of those challenging reads where you really got to pay attention and listen, I was just like, yeah, no, I can't do this just yet. But I will. I will read it. It is there for March. We're going to do it.
If you want to join in on Ashley and Emily's buddy read of Mistborn in March, just heads up, join the Who Needs Read book club so you can get on the Discord. And you guys will be able to talk it on Discord there. But that's a little sneak peek.
I'm definitely going to make a channel just for Mistborn. It's necessary. I need to read this book with somebody, so.
And I want to comment and laugh at you all as you go through it, because I think it is outside of your comfort zone. I'm not saying it's not going to be challenging, but I will suggest you read the first quarter of the book physically and then decide if you want to do audio with it. The audio, the narrator is great, but he is very monotone. And usually they have different narrators for the female voices. I don't think they do in Mistborn. They do in Stormlight, but I don't think they do in Mistborn. I could be misremembering. No. It's not really bad. It's not like, oh, let me give a high-pitched voice. It's not that bad.
No, it's more of like, I would say, honestly, his voice is kind of soothing.
It's very the ASMR. It is like, read me to sleep. And actually, if you know Baratheon from Game of Thrones or the guy in Three-Body Problem, who has a very like British accent. It's a really good regal voice to it. Mm-hmm. Demands power. Like it's very commanding. His voice sounds like that, but that is a 29-hour audiobook. You don't want to listen to that for 29 hours. It can be challenging.
You got to mix it up. And I think that's where I just fell short, because I was like, I'm going to listen to it. And then I got to like the chapter 2 or 3 or wherever I was. And then I was like, yeah, no, I can't just do his voice for this long. I was like, I think I need to read it. Then I started reading. I'm like, wait, what am I reading? And then it was on my Kindle. So yeah, it was just a toss up. But it's going to happen. I was looking to see who the narrator for that book actually was, because I noticed he's the narrator for a few of Sanderson's books.
I think he does all of them.
He does quite a few, because I was like, oh, well, let me check out the other book you told me. And I think it's the same guy that narrates
it. He definitely does all the special projects. And I cannot think of his name. You're looking it up, so maybe you'll get to it before me. But he's good.
Michael Kramer.
Yeah.
That is his name. And when you go in the app and you click on his name, a lot of the stuff that he's in here is Brandon Sanderson. So, yes, it's him.
Yeah. He does have a very unique voice. It's great for narration, but it can be tough. Speaking of tough, the other book you have is your challenging read of the year. We've got it at home. I have no desire to pick this tome up. And I read Sanderson. So I don't know. There's something about it. I think the writing is going to be too high for me. Mm-hmm. But take it away.
Priory of the Orange Tree. I think this is going to be a project for me. I have both of the books, that one and I think it's Day of the Fallen Knight.
I think it's the
prequel of it. So my dilemma is, do I read the prequel because it's out, or do I read it how it was supposed to be read, to read Priory first and then go back? So that's my thing. But yeah, it's not a bad book. It's just, I think, more daunting. Like you said, it's a huge book. I did start it, but I put it. So a soft DNF, but not a true DNF. I will be reading it.
Another one that maybe Emily can join in with you, because I bought her both books for birthdays, and they are really beautiful books. Mm-hmm. And I think the lore in it is going to be fun. I just don't know that I'm like knocking down doors to read it yet. So we'll see.
You'll read it with her.
She's so cruel to me. My challenging read for the year was Faust, Part 1. It's a classic, very Shakespearean, Greek. The way it's written is the challenge. The content is it. You know, make a deal with the devil kind of story, and learn to regret that deal, as anyone would, in unique ways. I'm reminded a lot about Neil Gaiman's writing and content, especially when thinking of like Sandman, where it blends classical stories in inventive ways. I was reminded very much of that. And I'm sure Gaiman has taken some of that work and ingested it into his own to give that kind of storytelling. This was part one, and it goes through the first half of his life. It was really good. I think I gave it 4.5 stars or something. It is great, but listening to it on audio is not going to help. Reading it in general is just a tougher read. I'm not an MFA student. I don't study literature. I love reading, but I'm not reading for the art of it, I guess is what I was saying. I'm reading for the enjoyment of it. And it was really tough. And it's not all. It's like 2 hours, maybe on audio. You could knock it out in an hour if you're reading it physically and you don't read like me. But good luck if you decide to pick that one up. It is really written in a way where if you're taking a literature course or you're doing something like that, it's perfect. Because I think the story itself is really great. But boy, is it hard to follow. Also, the audio I picked up is a full narration, full cast, which was really cool.
I do like books when they have the full cast and not even like the dramatized ones. I just like when you're listening to a book and it has the multiple. It kind of helps with the perspective when you're reading it.
It does. I think there's something to be said about narrators who can do multiple voices or full cast, especially if you're going to have, now if you're full cast and you have 15 characters, I don't care if you have 15 actors or it's too many.
That's way too many.
It's too many.
That sounds like a DNF.
It sounds like a headache. But yeah, I still recommend it. Highly recommend it for classics this year. I know we're going to be trying to hit some classics. I'm interested to see what we pick up, but we won't be doing Faust. I promise you that.
So that actually kind of works with Faust because it was one of your shorter books, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So we just go right into the next one of your longest and shortest books of the year.
Perfect.
So my shortest book, they were actually both kind of tied. It seems like all of my stuff is tied. I have to get my life together. Sarah Jake Roberts' All Hope is Found, more of a nonfiction book, and my first actual poetry book, All Along You Were Blooming, Morgan Harper Nichols. Both of those were very short books, but very powerful. I encourage anyone to pick those up. I feel like I always encourage everyone to pick up what I say, but pick up those two. Both of those are very good. I really like the content that Sarah Jake Roberts is putting out and her movement with women. I think it is very powerful, and I feel that all women should read anything that she puts out.
All right. Well, my shortest book is one that shouldn't count for anything because it's 48 pages long. It is not a book of poetry. It's actually a children's book written by, get this, Brandon Sanders. It came out last year, and I thought it was going to be like a kid's middle grade story he was going to be writing. Instead, it's such a funny little kid story, like a picture book, that you can absolutely read to your kids over and over again. Because it is really cleverly written and funny. And 48 pages isn't really 48 pages. That includes the title page and, you know, the publication page and all that stuff. So you can read it to your kids pretty quickly. Great illustrations. Right up the alley for people who like Sanderson and want to get those kids hooked from the start.
He didn't know he made a children's book.
It just came out last year. It's got a cool cover on it. It's got like a slash through it, and it's got eyes of like a dragon looking through it. And it's meant to be like, is this the most boring book? But a lot happens in it. You know how kids are. Everything's so boring. Definitely pick that up. And by no surprise, my longest book of the year is by Brandon Sanderson. It's Elantris, his debut way back in, I think, 01. It's 638 pages, according to Goodreads, and it felt long, but not in a negative way, but definitely in a way that it wasn't as polished as Mistborn, even though the story closely mimics it, but the magic is different. I say closely mimics it, it doesn't, but in terms of structure and how Sanderson writes, it's very much like you're going to have like a thievy, political, espionage-y, overthrowing of the government kind of thing going on. You're going to have an underdog. You're going to have kind of secret, sneaky things, great characters, lots of humor, just a little bit. I'm not even going to call it romance. There's occasionally a little bit thrown in with love, but he's a conservative man himself. You're not going to get smut. You're not going to get steam. You're not going to get mist. Like, you're not going to get anything that remotely takes you out of that. So for me, perfect. What was your longest read?
My longest read was actually A Court of Mist and Fury, the Agatar series. And I did finally finish the book, and I loved it.
Everybody says that's the best one.
I heard the third one.
Well, I'll say everybody says that one's better than the first one.
Yeah, I'm happy I made it through that one.
If you know, you know.
it was just, you had to get past like the first, I wouldn't even say like maybe the first third of that one. And then it was like, okay, now it's getting into something, but I enjoyed it. And surprisingly enough, it's actually the best sequel for me as well too.
Oh, wow.
I didn't read too many series last year. And if I did, I only read the first book.
Oh, I know.
I mean, I like to drag them out. Or if I know that second book is coming out or the third book is coming out and it's like a stretch, I'm like, let me just wait until it gets closer, like Earthwing, Iron Flame, and Onyx Storm in 2 days. Nobody's counting, though. I would say A Court of Mist and Fury, it was good, but I'm looking forward to actually reading book 3, which is Wings and Ruin.
Yes. Yeah, because the other one, the last one, Emily hasn't finished.
Silver and, Flames.
Oh, by the way, it's not the last one. She's still continuing the series.
Yes. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm out. I only read the first book because Emily was like, you're going to love it. And I bet you if I read book 2, I'd probably be a little more into it because if you know, you know, I don't like Tamlin. It is what it is. But there's just something so toxic about it. The whole thing is super toxic. Don't start. Yeah, it's not for me. My favorite sequel of the year, and I had a lot of sequels this year that I fell in love with around the same time, a year or two ago, maybe 2 years ago. Books like Aidan Thomas's book, Cemetery Boys, and The Sunbearer Trials, which I highly recommend 4 to 5 star reads. They're YA, queer, trans fantasies. They're so good. And Aidan Thomas, being a trans person themselves, I loved the representation. Cemetery Boys isn't out yet, the sequel. But this year, Celestial Monsters, which is the sequel to Sunbearer Trial. They're both duologies. I was so hyped. I was like, I'm getting this. And then T.J. Klune, House in the Cerulean Sea, sequel was coming out. Well, I read Celestial Monsters, and I loved it a lot less. And I was like, oh no, maybe this isn't the year for sequels, because I read another sequel, and I was disappointed. So I was like, is Klune going to let me? No, not at all. 5 stars. There's something about Somewhere Beyond the Sea, something about that whole universe. Have these adorable children. Talk about an audio narrator. He does all the voices, and he does one of these voices for a very unique character. So funny and like nasally and like kitty. And like, you can just picture each one of the voices of each of the kids. You will fall in love with every one of these children. And I would absolutely move to this island in a heartbeat. So that's my favorite sequel of the year, hands down.
I actually said I'm going to read that one over the summer.
That's a great time to read it.
Mm-hmm.
And then in the fall is a good time to read Somewhere Beyond the Sea.
Okay.
I think you can space it out because I know how you like to space them out.
Mm-hmm.
But if you hit that up in that June, July time frame and then do the sequel in the fall, I think you'll enjoy it.
Not us planning toward summer and fall for book.
That we know we're not going to hold to because we're mood readers and we don't do that.
Mood readers unite. All right. So let's go on to best new series or debut. For me, Belladonna. That one for me, I believe author's name is Helen Grace, I believe I'm saying that correctly.
Yeah.
That was a winner for me. That book probably honestly could have been a few different prompts, but I said that one fits there for me.
Did you finish Wisteria?
I did not.
Okay.
I started it on January 1st, actually. And I was like, you know what? I'm not feeling this one just yet. So I'm pretty sure I'll pick it up probably in a few days when I finish Iron Flame, because I'm going to let the Onyx Storm brew for a little bit before I decide to pick it up. I'm going to go purchase it, but I'm going to let it brew.
Okay.
And then I'll pick it up, but I will finish.
That's funny. My favorite new series, I'm gonna cheat here. I'm going to put 2, because One Dark Window is a duology and it's done. But I really loved that series. As I was going through all of the other ones, I'm like, these aren't series. These are standalones. Or I'm not going to count Mistborn because we said like new series. And while it's new to me, it's just too old and it doesn't need any more hype than I give it anyway. So One Dark Window, the Shepherd King duology. That one is so interesting. And I think in terms of things that is going to stick with me, that series, those 2 books, just unique enough and fun enough. I get kind of re-exhilarated when I think about how good they are and re-exhilarated by the fact that you haven't read the second one yet. Mm-hmm. Emily hasn't read either of them. So like, I'm excited for you guys to hopefully enjoy them. But my other series, which I like this one because this is a true, I don't think it's debut, but it is a new series. And that's the Impossible Creatures series. And I think that excites me so much because I think Luke, you know, he's 11. He just turned 11. He loves reading, but he also loves like Roblox more than anything. So, and Minecraft and YouTube and all that junk. So getting him to sit down and read like a 300-page book is going to be a while, a couple more years. But that gives us time for the author to come out with a couple more. And then we can experience them together. And I'm really excited about that the most.
That would be really exciting. I cannot wait for the day where I can literally just sit down with Ham. Yes, his nickname is Ham. I cannot wait till I can sit down with Ham and really just share some of these books with him. Have you guys ever read Harry Potter together?
No, we did do, we were doing like a movie marathon through all the movies. We have all the books because, you know, Emily, being born in our time as a millennial, I didn't have any money to buy these books, but she's got them all in hardcover, I think, except for maybe the first one. She's got all the collection. And so getting to experience that as well is a fun one. And I think as much as there's some negative connotation, like the kids don't need to know anything about that right now. With the J.K. Rowling, I think that world is still incredible. And I want to experience it again. So maybe we'll do a like a buddy read with me, Emily, and Luke reading Harry Potter together. I think that'd be fun.
That would be really cool.
But, you know, I got to read it a day before they finish it because I can't move at that slow pace. I need to, like, binge this thing and be done in 24 hours. I know the books. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're obviously going to read faster than our fifth grader, but I'm excited.
It's just something about being able to reread some of those books, like, now as adults. To turn around and say, I'm going to read Harry Potter or Percy, you know, like those books.
I'm trying to get him to do Narnia right now. We bought him the collection at Costco like 4 years ago because, you know, he likes reading and they're abridged. So, you know, it's easier to digest. I definitely want him to get into that because he was talking about it the other day because there was a lion on something and he goes, oh, it's like Aslan. And I was like, Aslan is literally God. No, that is just a lion. That's like, it's still a lion. But it's Aslan. I was like, you need to pick those books up, buddy.
That's excellent. All right. Well, let's go into the next one. Books outside of your comfort zone.
This is a fun one.
I think this one is a really, really fun one.
The duality of what we have written down is hilarious because I'm dark by nature and you're kind of light and bubbly.
Yeah.
And obviously you can tell where our comfort zones lie.
Absolutely. Because the books outside of my comfort zone was The Reformatory and Hidden Pictures.
Ghost Stories.
Yeah, both of them actually.
Yeah.
But it was so good. I think I surprised myself because The Reformatory, it has the Jim Crow era, Florida, that space, and then Hidden Pictures. I didn't think I was going to like it. I thought I was actually going to be scared because everyone was always saying, pick up the book because the drawings are in the book. I'm like, I don't want to read these drawings and see all these things, but it wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And definitely awesome.
I picked that one up because I was listening to Book Riot a lot podcast and they were suggesting it. And he was a brand new author. It's Jason Rakulik, who actually is probably going to get on our list next month for a thriller in the book club. And I hope we get it this time. But at the end of it, when I look back at it, couple years ago, I read it. Is it the most revolutionary? No, it's really not. It's been done before. And the twist was kind of like, oh, but I love a book that says, I'm not going to hint at the supernatural. I'm going to give you the supernatural. And like, that's what horror stories used to be, like Stephen King's It or The Shining. Those books aren't afraid to go with human horror, which people are just awful, but also there's like ghosts and demons and other things. And this blends both of those where people suck and ghosts are real. And it's a terrifying thrill ride. So I love that that was on yours, way outside of your comfort zone.
You got to read The Reformatory, though.
I will.
It's going to be a heavier read for you, but
it's slow.
Not slow.
I haven't read it, so I can't say that.
No.
It looks like it's going to be slow for me.
No, it's very, I would say that you might as well say it's fast paced. It's a page turner.
Okay.
Because you want to just know more. And the fact that the main character, I don't want to give names and all that stuff, but he can see things. And it makes you like, okay, so what is he seeing? And you're just like turning the pages and how it also ties in with Jim Crow and in this setting of this school and the characters that you meet, you have to pick it up.
I will.
Summertime for you.
Okay, that's an interesting time to pick. I'm thinking August, summer, because it feels like a good time. Actually, I think that's when it came out. My most challenging reads was the classic Faust, challenging for the style and the language it's written. And then Arthur and Teddy Are Coming Out. Such a cute book. And I love queer books, so that's not why it's outside of my comfort zone. But it's kind of a contemporary romance, but there's not a lot of like romance. I talked about it before. It was such a surprise for me to love it as much as I did. Definitely outside of my comfort zone. But I could see myself picking up some more contemporary storylines that deal with love and the challenges of things like being queer or the challenges of being biracial, as I, you know, I'm biracial, or other things that affect me that will allow me to connect with my characters. I loved it. I loved it. So we've come to the final prompt, and this was a tough one for me because I don't reread. I think I've reread twice. One of them was The Magician's Nephew for Narnia. And then The Ocean at the End of the Lane, my favorite book by Neil Gaiman. Hands down, I will read it again probably this year because I have the illustrated version and it is just too gorgeous to not pick up and crack open every few months. But I'd say that maybe the best chance of being reread would be books like A Dowry of Blood. I hated the sequel. I want more in that world, but it has to be written like A Dowry of Blood. And books like Icarus. Number one, I feel like this is a book that could find its way into my high schooler's reading list at some point. It is a great kind of retelling of Icarus in a very unique way. And then, of course, Impossible Creatures, because I think I'm going to reread that with my kids. So those are my possible rereads, but likelihood, not anytime soon.
See, I enjoy rereading quite a few books, actually. So I'll start. I am a huge nonfiction personal development. I feel that is a very important part of us and why we are here on this lovely earth to try and be better. That's a huge thing for me. Some of the books that I do actually annually reread, it's Feeding the Soul, Tabitha Brown. That one I actually read around my birthday every year. And I also just recently read Power Moves and Woman Evolved by Sarah Jake Roberts last year. Those were the first time I read them. They will also be probably an annual reread. And fiction-wise, which is very new for me because I don't really reread fiction books, but this one I would say The Invisible Life of Addie LaRue, just because I feel like I may have missed some different pieces. And for more of these complex reads, if you're reading through for the first time, you're just reading through. You're powering through because you want to know what's going to happen. But for your second time, you go back and you reread it. You're like, wait, but I didn't see that part. And they're like, oh, so this was foreshadowing something else that later happened. And that's something that I really do enjoy about reading, is because you can actually go back and see the art of what it was you were reading.
I highly support that. I would reread Addie LaRue again. I've not reread it. But it is one of the books that if I think about, I got into that reading again, and it was one of my first read. It is so good. And like, I can't think that a second reread would be like, oh, maybe I overhyped this. No, I think I'm going to love it even more. I didn't read it this year. I read it several years ago, but I could get down with a reread on that. But also to piggyback on that, I've got books for you to read that are in similar vein. I will say some of them are much more challenging. And I think, like, if I say Piranesi, which I love to death, but it is a 100% character driven book and it is kind of difficult to follow. And I did suggest to somebody else after Addie LaRue, like, you're going to love this. She DNF'd it and I do not fault her. But there are some other books out there, Starless Sea and some different things that I think you would really enjoy if you get it in the right mood. But I digress. Get back to your list. Sorry.
The other one I was just going to say was The American Queen. It was a beautiful telling of the book. It honestly was. Just knowing that we actually did have an American queen on Happy Land and reading the story with Luella and how powerful she was. I loved it.
I'm excited for books like that. That those are very much outside of my comfort zone just because maybe they have too much of a historical setting. A fan. I'm really not. But I found that like 2024 and a lot in 2025 has been the year of like historical setting book. The Reformatory, which like Tananarive Due, always kind of writes historical in ways. And I've only read a graphic novel by Tananarive Due, but I want to read more. And Reformatory was on my list. It has a beautiful story. And I think it's going to be a really good story for me to figure out, like, maybe this can be one of my favorite authors. I'm excited to read some stuff.
I'm excited for 2025.
I am too. And I'm so excited for the next episode because you're not getting it here. We've been babbling long enough, but I'm so excited to talk about what 2025 is going to have to offer for books, for content, for this podcast here, for our book club, for hopefully our lives. 2025, quarter through the new century, sky's the limit.
Yeah.
So thank you, everybody, for being patient with us through the holidays and letting us have our time with our families and our mental health and everything else that goes into to making this so that we can come back and re-energize for 2025 and take this podcast to the next level.
It's happening.
All right. Well, that does it for today. Listen out for the next episode coming soon. And we can't wait to talk more.
Dang.
Bye.
Happy reading.